This episode is brought to you by AARP. 10 years from today, Lisa Schneider will trade in her office job to become the leader of a pack of dogs. As the owner of her own dog rescue, that is. A second act made possible by the reskilling courses Lisa's taking now with AARP to help make sure her income lives as long as she does. And she can finally run with the big dogs. And the small dogs, who just think they're big dogs. That's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello, welcome to Why Not Mint Money. I'm Satya Sundanam from Mint's personal finance team. In this episode, we'll focus on the tax treatment and reporting of capital gains from equity investments, including mutual funds. When an equity share or a mutual fund unit is sold, the difference between the sale price and the cost of acquiring that stock or unit will be taken as capital gains. You will be liable to pay taxes on these capital gains in the year of sale, which has to be reported in the income tax return. It's not as easy as it sounds. As you all know, taxes come with a lot of conditions. We attempt to decode that in this episode. We have with us Tapati Ghosh, partner at Deloitte India. Let's welcome her.
Hi, welcome to Why Not Mint Money, a personal finance podcast where we help you understand basic money concepts and share strategies for you to build your wealth. So let's get started on your money journey.
Tapati, hi, welcome to Why Not Mint Money episode. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, Satya. Thank you for having me here.
The tax filing season is around the corner, Tapati. So we just want to focus this episode mainly on the tax treatment on the equity investments, including mutual funds and trading. So let's start with the, you know, IT forms. So what ITR is suitable to report capital gains or losses when somebody have investments in stock markets or mutual funds?
So if you have capital gains, you would need to use either an ITR 2 or an ITR 3. So ITR 2 is applicable for somebody who's a salaried income that has capital gains, and ITR 3 is for those who have a business and professional income as well as capital gains. So ITR 2 and ITR 3 are the two options.
Now, what are the tax rules? How is the sale of a listed stock or a mutual fund unit taxed?
Right. I'm going to get into a little bit of a detail over here to give clarity to our viewers. So the capital gain taxation on sale of listed stock and mutual funds, it depends upon the type of stock or the mutual fund scheme that you're invested in and the period of holding. The listed stock could either be equity or debt, while mutual funds can be classified into two categories, equity and debt-oriented mutual funds. So a mutual fund scheme that invests at least 65% of its corpus into Indian equities or equity-related instruments is the one that is classified as equity-oriented schemes for tax purposes. So there are two kinds of income that you can get out of such investment. One is the dividend income and one is capital gains and losses. For the purposes of this conversation, we will stay with or focus on treatment of capital gains and losses arising out of sale of such listed shares or redemption of mutual funds. The other parameter that is going to be very important is the holding period, which decides the rate of tax that you'll be paying on the capital gains, and hence, you know, the capital asset, whether it's listed stock or mutual funds, they could be categorized into long-term capital asset or short-term capital asset, right? And since, you know, the treatment is the same for listed equity as well as equity-oriented mutual funds, we'll deal with it as one class without distinguishing between the two for the purposes of this discussion. Now, listed equity and equity-oriented schemes must be held for at least 12 months to be considered as long-term capital asset. And for the others, of course, we're not dealing with debt-oriented schemes for now, but there the limit, the threshold is 36 months. Consequently, that the gains or losses that are arising out of sale redemption of such long-term capital assets would be treated as long-term gains or losses, and short-term assets as short-term gains and losses. So that is, you know, categorizing what is short-term and what is long-term is critical. So in a nutshell, the rate of tax and the rule set depends on whether it's a long-term or a short-term gain or loss, and whether the asset is that is held is a listed equity stock or equity-oriented mutual fund or debt-oriented mutual fund. So we are.
Understand. So equity, even the stocks or the mutual fund units are treated in the same way when it comes to tax purposes. And the period of holding, that means how long somebody has held the stock is also or should also be looked at because the tax rates on the long-term capital gains and the short-term capital gains are different. So if somebody is holding the stock or the mutual fund for less than 1 year, then it is called a short-term capital gain. And if it is held for more than 1 year, it is called a long-term capital gain.
Understood.
Absolutely. So now, shall we go to the tax rates that are applicable on this?
We go to the tax rates now. So long-term capital gains on sale of equity shares or equity-oriented mutual fund schemes were originally exempt under Section 1038 until 2018. With the amendment in the Finance Act of 2018, today, for long-term capital gains on listed stock or equity-oriented schemes, they are taxed at 10% in excess of 1 lakh rupees as per Section 112A.
Can you explain that with an example?
The surcharge is capped at 15% over there. So to take an example, say I have held on to the share or equity-oriented mutual fund for more than 12 months. I have a capital gain, which is calculated, difference of sales consideration and my cost of acquisition. If that tantamount is, 1 lakh 20, I deduct 1 lakh. And the 20,000 is considered as long-term capital gains to be taxed at 10%. A surcharge of 15% will be applicable on that.
Understand. So when is the surcharge applicable? Is it applicable for
all investments for long-term capital gains?
Okay. So how about the short-term capital?
Caveat in terms of the determination of the capital gains. If the purchase of the investment has been made prior to 31st January 2018, then a grandfathering clause or the benefit of the grandfathering clause kicks in. For any acquisition of a long-term capital asset, which is an equity-oriented mutual fund or an equity share, that is purchased after 31st January 2018, your cost of acquisition will be the actual cost of acquisition for the purpose of computing the capital gains. But if the acquisition has happened prior to 31st January 2018, 31st January or prior to that, then you could use the fair market value on that date of that share to be your cost of acquisition. It's an option given to the investor, right? And these details actually have to be kept handy at the time of preparing the tax return, because all of them, a lot of these details have to be input into the tax return.
Let me give a small example to listeners here with respect to the grandfathering clause for long-term capital gains. Say I bought a share in the year 2015 for 100 rupees. I sold that in September 2021 for 200 rupees. Generally, my capital gains will be calculated as 200 minus 100, 100 rupees. But the grandfathering clause says that you can take the market value of the stock as on 31st January 2018 as the cost. In our example, say the stock price as on January 31st 2018 is 150 rupees. I take that as my cost and calculate the capital gains as 200 minus 150, 50 rupees. I can pay tax only on 50 rupees and not on 100 rupees. That's the benefit I get because of grandfathering. But for people who don't know taxes much, I mean, who are like new to the income tax return filing, you know, these all provisions seem a little overwhelming. So can an investor with the details of, you know, when the share was purchased and when it was sold and what is the cost of acquisition and with the sale price, if they key in all these details, will the income tax department website itself will show up, you know, what is the tax amount, or is it that we have to calculate separately?
But you would need to know which category it falls under, whether it is long term, whether it is short term, whether it is purchased prior to 31st Jan 2018, whether it's purchased after that, what is my FMV on 31st Jan 2018. All of these details should be readily available with you. And frankly, most brokerage statements provide these details. They segregate it into short-term, and long term. They provide the FMV on the date of 31st January. So that makes it easier for the investor to file the tax return. But the base level knowledge about, you know, the parameters that I spoke about earlier is going to be critical.
Understand. Sure.
I spoke about the tax rate with regard to long-term capital gains, which is at 10%. Just to cover very quickly on the short-term capital gains as well, where it is taxed at 15% under Section 111A, specifically calling out the provision because even in the ITR form, the provision section provision is mentioned, and it will be easier for the investor to fill in the right, you know, fill in the details in the right section within the ITR. Now, in say I take a small example. If I've earned capital gains of about 1,30,000 from an equity-oriented scheme in the financial year, short-term equity gains as such, then the tax would be at 15% on that income, regardless of the income tax slab that the person falls under. Here, the 1,00,000 exemption that was available for long-term capital gains is not going to be available. And the person is going to be, but otherwise a 15% tax is going to be applicable, not the regular tax rate.
Understand. So short-term capital gains are taxed at a higher rate when compared to the long-term capital gains. And also the exemption that is available for long-term capital gains, which is the 1,00,000 limit, is not available for the short-term capital gains. Okay. Talking about this 1,00,000 limit, Dapati, so is it on a single share or is it on all the capital gains that a person is having throughout the year?
On a consolidated basis.
Okay. So now we understood what are these rules. So there could be also times when we incur loss. So we talked about capital gains and how taxes ought to be paid and how much taxes is to be paid. Now, what is the tax treatment when there is a loss?
So the Income Tax Act allows an adjustment of losses against taxable profits. But there are specific rule sets that need to be kept in mind.
Sorry to interrupt you. When you talk about adjusting the losses with the profit, so that means I can, you know, say suppose I incur 100 rupees loss here, and if I have, 100 rupees profit somewhere else, can I
set it off? I can set it off against each other.
Understand. But I'm sure it comes with conditions in taxes. Yes. Yeah, sure. Please go ahead.
So a long-term capital loss can be set off against long-term capital gains, cannot be set off against short-term capital gains. Though both of them fall under the same head of income, which is capital gains.
Understand. Can you again give us some, example here?
So, say I have a long-term capital gains of, as you said, 100. I have a short-term capital gains of another 100. I have a loss of capital. I have a long-term capital loss of 120. I can set off the 120 only to the extent of 100 against the long-term capital gain of 100. I cannot set off the 20 against the short-term capital gain of 100. That excess I can carry forward into the thing because I do not have enough income during the year under capital gains, under that particular, long-term, short-term, under that category, to be set off in the current year, so I can carry it forward.
Carry it forward in the sense you can carry forward that loss to the next year to adjust the profit in the next year with the loss that we incurred.
Against that relevant capital gain section. So short term can be that I'm carrying forward will have to be set off again short term capital gains in the next thing or long term capital gains, but long term can be set off only against long term capital gains arising in the subsequent years.
This is very complex.
Long term against long term, short term can be set off against short term and long term.
Understand. I hope the income tax website actually validates all these things and
it captures the long term, the carry forward, short term and long term separately. So in the future years, when you have gains, the set off will happen as prescribed.
Understand. Tapati, you know, I remember hearing somewhere that, you know, if one wants to carry forward some losses, they have to file the income tax return before the original due date. Is that true?
Within the due date. So need not be the original due date. The due date shifts, year on year, depending upon, the circumstances. But whatever is the due date for filing of a tax return, you need to file your tax return by that date to be able to, carry it forward to the following year.
Understand. So currently the due date is 31st July for all the individuals. So if I want to say, suppose it is not extended to the later date, everybody has to file their returns as on 31st July to carry forward the losses, if they have any, to the future years, right?
That is correct.
And there is no such condition for the set-off.
Tabithi, the government introduced AIS, the annual information statement, last year. It was understood that all our market purchase and sale transactions are reflected here. How can a taxpayer make use of this?
Right. As I said, script by script, the purchase and the sales during the year are captured. But that is not enough to compute your capital gains. You would need to refer to the brokerage statements and actually reconcile it with them.
Because?
Otherwise, give an example. For any sale that has happened during the current year, you need to match it with the purchase that has been made in an earlier year, right?
Right.
You would need to capture the purchase date. You would need to capture the purchase value, and so on and so forth. And all of these details, you know, whether it's grandfathered, not grandfathered, it's not captured in the current year AIS, TIS.
Okay.
For that, you would need to refer to your own records, or preferably, you know, the brokerage statements, because as I said, these days, a lot of detail is already available in the brokerage statement, including the date of purchase, date of sale, the price, FMV on the grandfathering date, which is 31st Jan 2018. All of those details are normally available in the brokerage statements. That will help you file, compute your capital gains and reflect it in the right section in your ITR.
Understand. Talking about reporting it in the ITR, do I have to report, say, suppose I've bought and sold three different scripts, three different stocks, or four different stocks? So do I have to report this capital gains script-wise or the stock-wise, or can I consolidate everything and then report?
The key thing that you need to keep in mind is the sale could happen in different at different times during the year. You could have a sale in the first quarter, in the last quarter. So all of these details will have to be bucketed in the relevant period to ensure that your calculation for interest, if any, for advanced tax purposes is computed right. So the ITR requires you to classify or segregate the capital gains transaction depending upon which quarter it falls under.
Understand.
Again, say for instance, you are eligible for the grandfathering clause, the benefit of considering FMV on 31st Jan 2018 for purchases made prior to that. There you have to go script by script. And all those details have to be input into the ITR, be it the purchase price, the sale price, the grandfathering price, you know, all of those details. So those have to be
captured. Quite a difficult task.
It is. It is. You need, as I mentioned, you need to have all of the details available with you at hand when you're preparing the tax return. Preferably, you should make a computation of capital gains ahead of filing the tax return, rather than just starting off with the utility itself, return utility.
Understand. So, what are the advanced tax rules for the capital gains that we earn on our equity investments?
So, in general, your advanced tax are to be paid in four installments. That's 15% by 15 June, 45% by 15 September, 75% by 15 December, and 100% by 15 March. But in the case of capital gains, a special rule set has to be there, has to be applied, because you can't estimate your capital gains in advance.
Absolutely. So your
installment dates that fall due after the date of sale are the ones that will apply. And if no such installment dates are still pending, then you'll have to pay your taxes, advance tax by 31st March.
Listeners, remember that the advance tax point is only for understanding. The time to pay advance taxes for financial year 21-22 is already over. You can keep this in point in mind for FY 22-23. Now, we talked about equity investing. Now, let's talk about trading, Tapati, because there are also people who trade on the equity stock markets. So, if someone has trading income, how will that be taxed? How is it different from equity investments taxation?
Yeah, it's quite different, actually. So, say a trader buys an equity share from the stock market and retains it for more than a day, we call it an equity delivery trading, as the intent of the purchase is to hold on the share for a time long enough for the ownership to be transferred to the buyer. In this case, the share is delivered into the trader's demat account, and the intention is to earn either a long-term or a short-term capital gains. It could be treated either as capital gains or a non-speculative business income. The treatment of this profit or the loss as capital gains or non-speculative business income has been a matter of dispute with the tax authorities, and to with the intent of reducing the quantum of litigation and dispute that may arise from this, the CBDT came up with a uniform approach, which basically said that in case of listed shares and securities, it's left to the choice of the taxpayer to report it as income as capital gains or business income. If the taxpayer treats the listed shares and securities as stock in trade, irrespective of the period of holding, then the income would be treated as business income. And if the taxpayer treats the listed shares and securities for more than that are held for more than 12 months as an investment, then the income would be treated as capital gains. The only condition that is to be followed is that the same method has to be followed consistently and continuously in subsequent years as well, unless there's some major change in the circumstances of that individual.
Tapati, but this is applicable when someone is buying the stock and selling the stock in the cash market. But if somebody is buying and selling a derivative contract in the F&O futures and options, then I think that will be directly that should be directly reported under business income, irrespective of the volume, irrespective of the period, right?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay, so all the confusion comes if you are buying and selling the stock in the normal cash market, but if one is trading in the F&O, then definitely it should be reported under business income, right?
Business income.
And as you started the episode with the ITR forms, you suggested that if somebody has a business income, then ITR 3 is the correct form. So if somebody is trading in the derivative market in the stock exchange, then the applicable income tax return for them is ITR 3, right?
That is right. Just one other thing to add, Satya.
Sure.
If a trader is buying an equity share and sells it on the same day, then it's going to be considered to be an intraday trading. And the intent over there is not really, it's basically to earn profits from the fluctuation of prices in the same single day. There again, it is to be treated as speculative business income, and there the rules are somewhat different in terms of you can set it off only against, if you have losses, you can set it off only against speculative business income and so on. So there are some additional rule sets over there. So a little bit of a caution if it is intraday trading.
Okay, so just to summarize what you have said, so if it's a trading income, then from the derivative contracts, then it should directly go to business and business income. And it is further divided into two segments. If it is intraday trading, then it should go as speculative income. If it is non-intraday trading and other F&O transactions, then it should be part of non-speculative business income. And there are some conditional differences between these two categories, right?
Yeah, just the only difference is that intraday trading could apply for non-F&O trading cases as well, where it's just an equity share. It does not need an underlying asset, which is an equity share. It could be a say a same day sell, buy, sell of an equity share.
Sure, sure. But I think the tax rates are same on both the speculative income and the non-speculative income.
It'll be as per slab rates, yeah.
Slab rates, yes. Okay, yeah. So just one last question, Dapati, before I let you go. There is a doubt on when should an audit be required, you know, when somebody is having a trading income to set off their losses or to carry forward. Is there any condition of audit requirement when somebody is having a trading income from the, you know, derivatives?
Yeah, there are actually quite a few rule sets over here. The you would need to first and foremost capture the sum of all the transactions, the absolute amount, to be able to capture the or compute the threshold or revenue threshold, which forms the basis of determining whether an audit is required, whether books and accounts are required, and so on. If the revenue threshold is 10 crore and above, then an audit is required.
Again, listeners, the calculation for turnover in this case is slightly different. It is a bit technical. Mint has covered a couple of stories already on reporting trading income in the income tax returns. You can find all these details there. I urge you to check out our stories. Thank you, Tapasi. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really, you know, insightful.
Thank you, Satya.
That's all for now in this episode, listeners. If you have any queries or suggestions, you can reach out to me on Twitter. My handle is @SatyaSontanam, SatyaSontanam. Or you can also write to us at mintmoney@livemint.com. Bye-bye.
This was a Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.